I don't think Ivan had exactly this in mind, but Richard's solution was, because we use Discord for internal communications while we were remote working, he made two custom emojis for the Discord server. So the first one, which is proven a little bit less useful, is just the "this is fine" dog from the memes. It's just his little face. And if you put that in there, it means I'm depressed about this thing that we're talking about, but I don't want to get into it. Like, it sucks. Let's move on.
Hello and welcome to another episode of In the Footsteps of Giants. I'm your host, Stuart Neil, and I'm joined by Richard and Tony of For Few Giants. We are recording this episode about a month after the last episode, so let's find out what's been going on over that month.
Hello, we are doing great, but the story of today is that we were not doing so great.
So after the last podcast, then we were talking about the release of the Night Fisherman and being included in bundles and things. What happened after that?
In a word, well, in a sentence, we came crashing down. So, like, looking at it now with an even head on, everything was grand for the couple of weeks after it. But, like, game production-wise, we'd released the game, gotten all the bundles and stuff. We were kind of in the right place in the right time. And then we expected ourselves to keep working, keep pumping out content. We thought we could make another, like a sequel to it or something in the 2 weeks after. And realistically, we spent that entire 2 weeks just following up on the release, like patching things and doing like a lot of the marketing stuff that Richard led. But we didn't acknowledge that we were still being productive in that time. Mm-hmm. We just kind of beat ourselves and were like, oh no, we haven't got another build yet. What's going on? And that was coupled with the fact that like we'd just done 6 weeks rapid prototyping, a week on releasing the game, which we've been doing ever since the pandemic hit. And then after recording the podcast, the real world hit. And all that stuff that we'd been ignoring, well, not ignoring, but all the stuff we hadn't been focused on because we'd been able to keep working with the rapid prototyping period, just absolutely walloped us in the face. And it was not good. I spent some time just sat there cataloguing the use of chemical weapons against US citizens for a couple of days rather than working on the build. Richard did like a bunch of outreach stuff with like he's trying to improve the reach of that bundle and stuff. Mm. So yeah, more or less, we took a running jump, managed to high five, and then immediately fell on the landing.
Yeah.
Were you buoyed in any way by the coverage that the Night Fisherman got?
Yeah. So we'd spent 2 years making Ring of Fire and basically got like no coverage and no real big hits out of it at all. Mm. And then suddenly we released The Night Fisherman, and it was just a string of dopamine hits, one after the other. Like, we were getting picked up by different press outlets, we got a few reviews, we're getting plenty of good reviews on Steam, and I think part of our downer was just being able to subsist off of all the praise and all the validation that came pouring in for a short period of time. That made you feel like you didn't really need to do anything. But probably what was the more important thing and sort of what we've taken forwards is that to bring ourselves out of that low, we put in some process. We built some structure into our development that allows us to hopefully avoid that to happen again, but just to prepare ourselves if ever we do have downtimes again.
Mm. What about the process of promoting The Night Fisherman? Did you learn anything from Ring of Fire that you either didn't do or did do with The Night Fisherman?
I did all of Richard's ideas. That was probably the biggest difference with Ring of Fire and this one.
What do you mean, sorry?
I just mean like on Ring of Fire, we were trying to chase publishers at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. And we were constantly in this battle between, do we spend whatever half days in a week we're going to spend on marketing? Do we spend those marketing ourselves to one type of customer, the publisher, or a different type of customer, an audience. So we spent a hell of a lot of time during Ring of Fire trying to sell to publishers. And we got super snazzy pitch decks and people telling us we were doing everything right. And none of it worked, which was demoralizing when you're like 6 or 12 months down the line. And after a while, became jaded with it. So Richard's really good at absorbing information from everywhere and actually trying to act on it. Like, not just reading it and then not doing anything with it. Like, Richard will read an article that talks about, I don't know, some new way to reach audience. Like, after you release on Steam, going through the list of Steam curators and messaging them all one by one, for example. Mm. And like, messaging relevant ones one by one. But, like, during Ring of Fire's development, there was a lot of times where, because we'd got so defocused, Richard would just come up with like 10 of these ideas for every one day we would spend on the build, or at least that's how it felt to me. So there was a lot of times where I'd be like, nah, we can't do that. Like, no, we need to stay focused. No, let's not do that. And it didn't really do it. I'm not sure I was entirely wrong, but it definitely didn't do us any favors. Whereas the structure of what we did with The Night Fisherman meant that while producing it, we only focused on producing it. Then when we were launching it, we only focused on launching it. And then after it had launched, I didn't really want to do this at the time, but we only really focused on post-launch stuff and marketing and spreading it around. And that worked a lot better. So for that week afterwards, or the week or two, like, all the marketing stuff that that we wanted to do, I was just actually doing it rather than trying to go and focus on the build instead. But I can't take too much credit because Richard did more of that than I did.
How much work was involved in doing a lot of that follow-up?
Richard should answer that question.
Yeah, that's good. How much work was involved in the follow-up? So primarily, I would say I was doing like updates to this, to the Steam page, and like back-end admin stuff, like creating art assets, creating trailers and videos and stuff. But whenever I found the time, I was attempting to connect with people, message relevant journalists, and responding to anyone who was like commenting on our game, who was making a YouTube video, and cataloging their websites and their articles and stuff into a spreadsheet so that we can contact them again next time we release a game. We got quite lucky. I came across a bot, a Discord bot, which manages coverage by force of habit. And so we would get pinged real time whenever someone had recorded a video or posted an article for us. And we had Google Analytics, which was just collecting stuff. And like, we had Twitter set up the tweet deck where it was looking for keywords, The Night Fisherman, that sort of thing. So we were able to respond basically in real time whenever anyone was mentioning or talking about our game, which I think helps a lot. If someone's making the effort to talk about your game and the developer instantly reaches out, I know for YouTubers, it means a lot to them to just get that little bit of like personal touch.
There are some of them who then engage with us on Twitter, and then they've like advanced tested the second game and stuff like that.
Yeah. And we're hoping they might record videos for the next one. They've certainly shown an interest in it, and they're interested in what we're doing. So hopefully we'll gain a bit of an audience around that, and we'll build up their channels beside us.
At what stage then did you just move on to what would be the next game?
So I think we just kind of reached rock bottom, and we couldn't really find any more legit jobs to do. We were just kind of doom scrolling, avoiding contacting each other, and like trying to force ourselves to sit at the computer and do work. When I think realistically we probably should have just scheduled a week off, because we just finished 6 weeks of prototyping, which is essentially sort of crunch. So like, it was a pretty exhausting period, and we were riding a high there, and we kind of anticipated that we'd be able to keep going forever, and then suddenly and thoroughly crashed out. Once me and Tony started talking again, we originally were like reaching out and contacting producers. Our first idea was, okay, well, we know we need a producer. Maybe we'll try and contact a producer that's a publisher or something, and then they can help us out with marketing. So we contacted a few micro publishers, and all of them just looked at The Night Fisherman and were utterly bemused. They didn't really understand what we were doing, how it would work financially, and how well they how they could add to it or how it could benefit them.
Mm.
They saw the fact that the Night Fishermen had already launched as being a problem because it meant that they couldn't do a lot of like pre-launch marketing or help define the brand or anything.
Mm.
They weren't quite seeing what we were trying to do in terms of like almost early access releasing games in a sequence. So that didn't work. Then the next step was we had a mentor, a guy called Rory, who runs the Pixel Mill, the place that we're meant to be co-working in. And right now it's all like virtual office space. So he started mentoring us and giving us weekly production at just an hour of his time, which we really is more of kind of like a lightweight therapy session for me and Tony to just like sit in a hangout and just like chat shit and complain about what all the stuff that's going bad, and for him to listen and for us to figure it out for ourselves. And then we engaged another couple people who are a little bit more proficient at production than us, got some advice, and I don't know exactly what we ended up doing, but that was it. We built our own production tools. So I'm using a Kanban board based on a bit of software called TickTick.
I think there's some useful wrinkles to that story that have been missed there.
Sorry. You seem to like squirm at the idea of it being therapy as well.
It wasn't that. It was more that like I agree with that point, but the structure of how it came about, I feel like you glossed over it a little bit and how it actually works. Because like it's not actually 1 hour a week, for example, which is what you said.
Okay.
But like the important thing is the regularity.
Yeah.
The two additions or like amendments I'd make to what Richard said is that we were struggling. We were in that kind of dark place. And it wasn't that we like weren't talking to each other at all, but it was that we were like trying to get to work in the morning, disappearing for most of the day, and neither of us would talk to the other one because we both felt guilty. So we just like kind of avoid each other for maybe like 8 hours at a time, and nothing was really getting done. So I have this call that I do every 2 weeks on a Thursday morning with Anthony Genaud. I have no idea whether I said his surname correctly, who is a French narrative designer. He'd hate me if I called it a mentorship, so I won't call it that. But he gives me advice and counsel. So on that Thursday morning of the week that we kind of started turning things around, I spoke to him and I was like, Anthony, we're in the pits, nothing's getting done. I think, you know, we need a practical solution to this because, you know, we're getting paid and we haven't taken an official holiday or anything. He was like, right, you need to get a production process in place. And it was his idea to do the thing where we put together a little pitch and just go to some publishers and say, this is what we're doing. We've already got an audience that's here for it. By that point, we'd had like 15,000 downloads or something overall. And he was saying, go to like one of the small publishers that you already have a relationship with and ask them to just market the game, but really just provide a producer. To which I groaned and I tried to tell him I didn't want to do it because we just spent 2 years chasing game publishers. But he said, no, you'll do it by the end of the day. You'll put a pitch together. So we spent the rest of the day doing that and then weaseled out of it anyway. I think Richard spoke to a couple of producers about it. But yeah, we decided to try and sort it out with Rory instead. So because he already had a responsibility to us and his job performance is kind of dependent on whether or not we produce anything. So he has an interest in us doing things. So that's when we spoke to Rory, and the structure we put in place with him is that he has a meeting with us for about 30 minutes twice a week. So on a Wednesday morning, he'll speak to us. And on a Friday morning or a Friday afternoon, if there's a scheduling reason, we'll have 30, 40 minutes where we just show him what we've done since the last time and set expectations for what he's going to see in the next meeting. That really helped sort us out just because it meant that I feel safer in the production, like we're not going to fail, basically, because if we start to go skew-whiff and stop working, it means somebody is going to notice within like 2 days, and they'll know that we're not working, and they'll ask us why, and get us help if we need it, or just kick our asses. Whereas the way it was previously, where we were only like showing builds to people every 2 weeks or something, you know, that's a 2 weeks is a huge stretch of time to just lose to being completely unproductive before somebody spots that you're in a dark place and tells you you need to do something about it. So putting that safety net in for ourselves was very important. We may have gotten away from the original question, and I can't remember at what point I butted into Richard's answer. So, oh, you were going to talk about other processes we put in.
Yeah. I'd like you to say that, because you're on a roll.
You want me to talk about it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so there's this other mentor. You'll notice there's a theme here, called Ivan Davies, who was really helpful to us. He's like this producer extraordinaire. He lives for Gantt charts and organization and everything I hate. And we had a call with him around the same time we started these talks with Rory. And we told him what happened. And he gave us two or three, let's say three, really important pieces of advice. So the first piece of advice was that whether or we were or weren't overworking ourselves hours-wise during the prototype period, and we differed a bit on that. I overworked myself a bit. Richard probably overworked himself a lot. Whether we were or weren't, regardless of the number of hours we were putting in, for that six-week prototyping period, we were creatively running on top form. And he pointed out that you cannot do that constantly. Like, athletes don't run their Olympic times every single time that they like train on the track, or they go to lift or whatever. They don't do their Olympic like goal weight every single time. You don't. You do like, you build up to that shit, and then you go really hard at it, give it like 150%, and then you don't stop, but you do need to cut back, and you appreciate that you're not going to be lifting so heavily for a little while. And that was what we were missing, I think. We kind of thought that we could just cut back to like, you know, 35, 40 hours a week or whatever and continue producing at the same like per hour pace we were beforehand. But that was also a fallacy. So that was useful piece of information number one, when we realized that we weren't going to be as productive in the following weeks. Useful bit of information number two was that he told us we needed to put a process in place for when we needed to ask for help and for communicating with each other when we were in those states where we actually wanted to avoid each other because of mutual guilt about being unproductive or whatever. So I don't think Ivan had exactly this in mind, but Richard's solution was, because we used Discord for internal communications while we were remote working, he made two custom emojis for the Discord server. So the first one, which is proven a little bit less useful, is just the this is fine dog from the memes. It's just his little face. And if you put that in there, it means I'm depressed about this thing that we're talking about, but I don't want to get into it. Like, it sucks. Let's move on. So the like, if somebody talks about, I don't know, the fact that we wanted to publish something 2 weeks ago and we've still not got anything, you just put that this is fine, doc. But the much more helpful one is the help me cat, which comes from some kind of meme, but I don't know. And it's just a picture of a cat's face that looks like it's crying. And if you post that, the rule is that the other person has to drop what they're doing immediately and, if necessary, give you up to an hour of time to just get you back on track. So we put this into place. Richard immediately used it. And then I sat there with him for an hour and I was like, right, stream your screen to me so I can see what you're doing. And you are going to work on making this animation controller or whatever it was that he didn't want to do. And if he started, like, if I could see his Unity screen. So if his mouse disappeared for more than like 5 minutes at a time and nothing was happening on the Unity screen, I knew he was on Twitter. So immediately I could shout him down and be like, no, get off Twitter, and get him focused again. And just the process of doing that a couple of times, like Richard used it today. And the process now is just, he'll say, oh, I don't want to do the press kit. And I'll say, okay, stream your screen. And he'll do it. And I just leave it because I have three monitors here because I'm extra. So I'll just leave Richard's little stream on one monitor and tell him every now and again that he needs to focus. But generally speaking, the way it works now, I had to more sit on you, didn't I, the first couple of times. But these days it's more like I just say, right, stream your screen, and like once or twice over the course of the next hour or so I might go like, are you still doing the press kit? And it'll be like, oh yeah. Go back to it.
I think it's a little bit rose-tinted there, Tony.
Really?
I think I remember the first time I used it, you were like, oh, I don't want to do this. And I was saying...
Nah, that was beforehand. That was before the help me cat.
Because I tried to drag you onto helping me, and you were like, vehemently, no. This is so unproductive.
I upset him. What I did was... It was before we put these processes in place. It wasn't when you had the help me cat thing. We were trying to get some work done. I'd found a sliver of motivation and I was trying to work on the script. And then Richard said, can you help me come and do this thing that I have no idea how to do? So Richard knew how to do it in theory, but I didn't know how to do it. And I was like way too dismissive and was just like, why? This is useless. I don't know how to do that. So why do you need my help to do it? Do you really need my help to do that? And what Richard was trying to ask me was like, can you sit here and force me to do it? But what I heard was, I need you to do this with me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, and refused. And then Richard was upset at me justifiably and was like, why wouldn't you help me? And because he'd helped me previously in a similar situation, that was during the dark period, and then like a day or two after that, we spoke to Ivan, and then I came to understand what I was actually needed, and we put the emoji things. Have I been fairer now?
Yes, yeah.
And the third and final thing that Ivan taught us—he packed a lot into an hour—was just that. We probably weren't going to find a task management process that worked for both of us. Because what we'd done previously is we tried to use like Trello Kanban boards, or we tried to use like task lists or timers or whatever, and try to both be on the same system and manage tasks that way. And it would always be that one of us would drop off it and then the other one would be like, oh, well, you're not using it. And because I didn't want to be, for example, beholden to whatever task management tool it was because I didn't like it, I wouldn't then enforce it for Richard. So if Richard got sloppy with things, then I wouldn't say anything, and vice versa. Like if we were using something that worked better for me, Richard went off it, he then wouldn't be like, Tony, you need to use the tool, because he didn't want to use the tool. So the most useful thing is, what we've done recently is separating those out. So I have my own system that I think Richard occasionally looks at, which is like way simpler. I literally have like a whiteboard, a virtual whiteboard, and it just has post-it notes on it. And there's like post-it notes for the game we're currently working on, like minimum viable, and then final or polish or whatever. So there'll be like a small number of post-it notes on the top line for shit I need to do so that the game is fundamentally playable, and then a much larger amount at the bottom of stuff I can pick and choose from. And... that's been working for me. I probably could do with more oversight on it. Hint, hint. But but Richard's been using this Kanban board thing that you can probably describe better. But I look at that every day.
It's kind of interesting that we are using separate systems, because in a typical company setup, everyone would be on the same thing and you would just be managing the team, like the producer of the team would be managing all the individuals on the same tool, and that makes their life easier. But what Ivan told us was like, you're only two of you. There's no need for you to both be using the same system. If it's not working for you, come up with your own systems. Because I was lamenting the fact that I had a system that worked for me 6 months ago, and now I have nothing. And so what I'm using at the moment is a tool called TickTick. It's essentially a Kanban board, which is a list, like a series of lists. One is to do, the next one's today, then it's completed. But the most important thing about my Kanban board is that I have a divider that splits the column in half. So the top half is things that I want to do, and below that is things that I deem to be out of scope. And I don't know if that's the correct word, but that's the word I use. I have an out of scope for the day, and I have an out of scope for the project in general. And I have a final column, which is out of scope for the sprint or whatever. So this is the thing that I think has always been missing from my workflow, and maybe from other people's workflows, is that I have a tendency to overwork because I overload myself with too many jobs in a day. And then I get halfway through them and I start finding other things that I need to do, because it's just the way game development is. You stumble across more problems than you are solving on a given day. Mm. Or you get a bunch of emails and new jobs pop up that you weren't expecting.
Yeah.
That become more urgent or whatever. So I have this divider called out of scope, and I will just move tasks under there whenever I think that I'm not going to be able to get it done in that day. And that helps me so, so much, because I don't feel guilty about not doing those jobs. I don't end up as much working in evenings to finish what I promised myself I would do. And when it comes to the end of the, say, 2-week development cycle or sprint, I will have filled up that out of scope list with a whole bunch of things and feel really proud of myself because I've cut things that are not important. So I've had ideas and I've not then pursued those ideas, which for me is a really unique idea because I am like a cat after a laser beam. I will just go and chase the shiny thing all day.
Yeah, that's very true. Like, it's both your strength and weakness, I think, is that you're really good at coming across new things and wanting to start it, and like you come across like a new idea, whether it's about like something to go in the game or some way of like spreading the game or whatever it may be, and you'd be like, oh, this is really cool, let's try and do this, and you'll start a thing. Which, and I'm the total opposite. I'm like, I want to do one thing all the time, and not do like every new idea that comes across. But I think we've finally, after a couple of years, reached some kind of balance where, like, I think you're getting better at filtering out stuff that's outside of scope but keeping what's important, and I'm getting better at trusting that the stuff that you have filtered is worth investing time into and just going and doing that and not avoiding it so much.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'll just split a task into two. I'll be like, okay, so version one of this asset is within scope, but version two isn't. So I'll throw version two in the backlog to come back to another day. And that way I don't feel guilty about not having finished the whole thing. I've done the very least I need to do, the minimum viable. And quite often, more often than not, we end up shipping the minimum viable just because of how quickly we're turning things around. But I'm happy with that.
And then everyone tells you it's great anyway. And you're like, oh, cool.
If you haven't already, please follow the show on anchor.fm. You can also follow us on Twitter. Farfewgiants is at Farfewgiants. Richard is at AnimTree. Tony is at Anthony_DE_Fault. You can also follow me at SaintlyStuart. Until next time, thank you for listening.
Goodbye for now.
Goodbye.